I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
From the WEEI studios, 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston, an Odyssey sports station.
It's over. Time to say it again, Boston. Anything's possible. Banner number 18 has been secured.
The 2024 Bill Russell Finals MVP goes to Jaylen Brown.
What they gonna say now?
Celtics ownership group announcing today that it plans to sell its stake in the team.
The plan, the expectation is to sell the team in two parts, 51% going fairly soon, 49% then closing in a second closing. That's the expectation.
Jason Tatum, the richest contract in NBA history. He will become the first $70 million per year player.
Overall, I can still get better.
The man elected not to play, Jason Tatum.
Steve Kerr, that's some straight bullshit.
Were you surprised to be left off Team USA? Do you think they had any role in you being left off?
I do for sure. There'd be more stuff to come with that. I'm not gonna comment on it.
No one in the NBA is scared right now of the Boston Celtics.
People are gonna say the target's on our back, but I hope it's straight in our forehead and between our eyes. I hope I can see the red dot.
Here's Tatum's back to Brown for the slam. Washington tries.
Show with Christian Arkan and Andy Hart starts now on WEEI.
Welcome in. It's WEEI Afternoons. We are live down here at the Garden in the Big Night Live studios. Nice to have you with us here today. It is the opener, and the streets are buzzing here around TD Garden and North Station in general. It's Christian Arkan. It's Andy Hart. Got a packed show for you today, as we'll be talking with Tom Giles of the NBC Sports Boston Celtics pre- and post-game. Also, it's a Ross Tucker Tuesday, as there's a lot of Patriots news to get to today as well. But we start here with the Boston Celtics, beginning anew a title defense. As lots of people walking around here already. It's only 2 o'clock, and I got here around 1:30 walking in, and there's people all over the streets decked out in Celtics green, getting ready to come in here and support this team as they go and try and defend their title. And listen, Andy, I mean, we've been talking a lot about the Patriots this year, the Red Sox collapsing in the second half, as they have a few times, the Bruins having a not so special, not one and done, but one and a half and done there in the playoffs last year, and sort of a tough offseason for them, tough start to the year already. And it seems like with all of that sort of on the horizon here, the Celtics are here. This is here. This has begun. And this could be the beginning of something pretty important and pretty special in Boston sports. Now, it's been a while since they've raised the banner. They haven't done it in 16 years. Before that, it was 22 years, I want to say, 86 to 08, and then now 08 to 24. So this isn't something that happens all the time around here with this team, but there's certainly a sense and an idea that this is the beginning of something that's going to be more than just one banner. You know, finally, that Jaylen Brown interview with Taylor Rooks might finally come true, as I think people are expecting a lot from this season. They're expecting a lot from this roster. They're expecting a lot from Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, as you heard in that great montage there from Brian Frazoco and Joe Mazzulla as well. There's also the peril and uncertainty of this sale that's still going on. We've heard a little bit about that from Whit Grosbeck, and he spoke today on the Greg Hill Show. We'll get to some of his comments in just a little bit. But I find myself here thinking that this is a team and an organization and really a moment in this franchise's history where they have every opportunity to do something special and become something special. You may say they already are something special, and I'd agree. That was a special year last year. But it's been 6 one-and-dones in a row. And you can't just be another one and done. Not with this talent, not with this amount of players in the top 50, which I know is just a list, but no one disagrees with that. Like, this is a team that if you go through all the expectations and predictions on ESPN, CBS, NBA.com, etc., overwhelming majority are having the Celtics as repeat champions. And I'm one of those people, and we'll get to our predictions a little bit later on in the show as well. But it seems like when that banner goes up tonight, I just have a feeling that's going to be one of those moments that you see and DVD, well, if DVD still existed, but, nope. You know, and these type of things in the future where it's like, this is where it began, that banner goes up, and this was the beginning of an important time for a Boston Celtics team and a franchise that's had different dynasties over the years and different decades, and it's been a while, sure, but I think now is about as clear to the fans and as clear to the pundits around the country that there's something brewing here that could be difficult for teams to stop for years on end.
So everybody listening, or most people listening, experienced a dynasty, which is not something all sports fans can say. But most people listening are fresh off a Patriots dynasty that no one saw coming.
Yep.
Correct? They didn't see the first championship coming.
Right.
And then they certainly didn't see the ensuing championships, the second dynasty, the whole totality of it. We lived it. And I think that, in part, has fueled watching this team. This time I see it coming. This time I see Tatum and Brown, and I see greatness. And yet, that increases the pressure X-fold. Like, I really believe that. I was one of those that before they won a title, I thought this had the chance to be a dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're saying that, you're either a homer or a moron, right? And maybe that's both, Andy. You can click off both, whatever. And now you got one in the books, and I do feel like, you know, we had the Wick comments this morning that we'll get into a little bit. I do feel like once you put last year to bed tonight with a ring and a banner, I do feel like they all are very intent on history. They are not happy. And one title is good. Ask Charles Barkley what he think of one title.
Patrick Ewing.
Those types of people.
Absolutely.
But this is not what this team has been built for. It was built for a long haul. It was built with two pillars that have stayed together and are being paid $500 million between them to be the foundation, hopefully for a long period of time, depending on how the sale goes and ownership change affects things. But I think, I don't know about you, like, I've never lived the buildup to a dynasty. I've never experienced the idea that I saw a dynasty coming. And, like, I don't know if the Astros are a dynasty, but that famous Sports Illustrated cover.
Right.
That, you know, and this, the Astros are going to, whatever year it was, they claimed they were going to, like, that prediction, that idea of something special is coming.
Shaq
not...
and Kobe was kind of a predict, you know, like you saw that at the Warriors in the beginning, I think, after they had those two big seasons and beat LeBron like that. You could tell maybe something was happening.
But there aren't that many where it's like it catches you off guard and you're already in it. Or if anything, people expect Giannis to win multiples. They expect Jokic to win multiples. And now they're like, oh, they might be done because the Celtics might be on a little run here.
Right.
And I don't think it's actually Homer talk. I think it's very legitimate. Because
it's not just Homer talk, because this is what national people
correct.
Are saying. It's not just us. We're not just saying this. And listen, I'm a big Celtics fan, obviously. I'll rip the team when they deserve it. They didn't deserve it too much last year. And years before that, they did. This is objectively what people are expecting from this team.
And this team is built to win multiple titles. And we'll get into reasons why it might not. But when you look at it, I know Charles Barkley was one of those that believed, even if it just... if it had the talent but maybe didn't have the motivation, well, now you done pissed them off.
Yep.
Now you done made the best team in basketball mad. You gave them reasons to be more motivated, which I don't know if they did or didn't need. I think their coach is probably potentially uniquely qualified to deal with
this. That was one of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
Thanks, Chuck. You're going to unveil a banner for a great season. And in a way, it's only the tip of the greatness iceberg, right? People are expecting more. They're looking for more. And I think genuinely should be. Why would you not be predicting the Celtics to win the title?
This no feels earthly like reason.
Unless Tiger versus the field.
Kristaps Porzingis is so important and he's injured or something, maybe. And that's one of the questions that we're going to ask here about this team, about the health of the bigs and everything. And we'll get into all the details in the weeds when it comes to what it's going to take to repeat as champions with a big target on your back. But the thing about it is, the Celtics, you're right, like Golden State, the year before they won the championship, they got knocked out in the first round. The year before that, both with Mark Jackson as the head coach, they lost in the second round. Before that, they hadn't made the playoffs for 5 years. So when they won that championship, it wasn't like, oh yeah, obviously here comes the dynasty.
Right.
And with the Celtics, they were in the conference finals
6 years. Like, they just, they, that's where they lived, basically. And they couldn't quite get there. And Jaylen Brown spoke to Stephen A. Smith. He talked about the expectations and sort of how close they came all those times, and how people, certain people, wanted to blow up the team and they wanted to keep it together because they were on pace for something that they thought was going to be special. And listen, they did hold it together. They made some key additions, obviously, which I think you have to include that when you're talking about how this all went down.
They also made key additions along the way.
Right.
I think there were people that along the way thought the seeds of a dynasty might have been planted with past renditions of the South. You know what I mean? Like, I almost think people were hoping that built around Tatum and Brown. Those were always sort of the centerpiece, although you're right. There were plenty of people that started to go down the road of, nah, that's not the centerpiece. You got to break it up. You got to trade one off. They can't, they're too similar. You can't win with them. The combination, blah, blah, blah.
I mean,
blah,
listen, I said that a lot of times, and it seemed like that, it seemed like that was the case. They added around them, and they put a great roster together, and that team couldn't be stopped. But you can't tell me that they didn't come up short before that. That
was a
team that was favored over Miami. They were favored over Golden State. Like, they were the team that was expected to break through earlier than they did. And listen, I mean, it's not to take anything away from what they accomplished last year, but it's not like those years didn't happen. That's why a dynasty is now expected, because they were right there, and they were there through their formative years too, of these two young superstars in their early 20s, in their teens, really, if you're talking about Jason Tatum.
And now in
the conference final, and now they're in their prime.
Title
and now they're
prime.
Extended, and they're going to be here for a while, unless the new guy or girl, who buys the team ends up trading one of them. But let's hope that doesn't happen. But really, I mean, listen, they've set this thing up, and Wick Grosbeck drained that trust fund. He's got, right now, I'd say, the perfect setup here to repeat as champions and to be a dynasty down the road that wins 3-5 or 4-6, whatever it is. I mean, listen, I see some of these other teams, and we'll get to them as well over the course of the show, these other teams out there that tried to load up in the offseason, the Knicks, who you see tonight, which we'll get to, the 76ers, who Joel Embiid and Paul George are not playing tonight, which is typical for them, I would say. But really, this is a Celtics team that's still loaded, that retained just about everyone, didn't really have to add much, and I think is poised to go out and do the same thing they did last year. I don't see anything really standing in their way.
I don't either. And that, I mean, that's almost weird. Because I feel like inherently, as New Englanders, first of all, forget about sitting behind this microphone where people be like, you media, you can always find the negative in something. But also as New Englanders.
Give us time. It's opening night.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guarantee after tonight we'll have some details.
There'll be something.
You know what I didn't love last night? X, Y, and Z.
Peyton Pritchard missed a half-court shot before halftime.
Right.
And it was just, you know, he usually makes those. And I'm disappointed.
But doesn't this feel weird? I mean, the fact that you really have to work to come up with, heck, even Wick Grosbeck's like, yeah, and Porzingis looks good on the practice court. Like, there is nothing negative surrounding the coach. Everybody seems to be liking him more, not liking him less, as he wins and says weird things about death and imminent demise and things of that nature.
And really, they were all just dust in the wind. You know?
Yeah,
that's really,
like,
what it's all about.
So it's a weird spot, I feel like, for Boston. Because, I mean, you lived it to some degree with Brady and Belichick and the Patriots, but it was far more down the road.
Right.
I don't think Patriots fans felt that after 0-1. You know why? Because they didn't make the playoffs in 0-2.
Sure.
And I don't think they felt that in 0-2. In fact, you know, they started to go down, they hate their coach and Lawyer Malone. Like, when was the last time, if anything, it was probably the 0-7 Patriots that didn't come to fruition. Maybe
when
the 0-4
Patriots.
Okay,
this is something, and that was in the middle of their 10 years where they didn't win anything.
Yeah,
so,
and it was the biggest disappointment that any sports fan in New England ever lived through.
I'd say it's that same kind of anticipation.
Yeah.
That same kind of super team, like, this is, who's going to stop you, what's going to stand in the way. And then I think 2014, when you got Revis and Browner, and then that team won another one in 2016. It's like, all right, here we go. And then that was a little bit different, I guess.
But it was an aging, like, felt like it was kind of keep it together, and not just the Robert Kraft documentary, keep it together. Just guys were aging, and there was a lot going on. Where this is, you have two. It was funny listening to the Stephen A. Smith podcast. Jaylen Brown was like, oh yeah, my 28th birthday means I only have 2 years left in my 20s. And it's like, no. You have 2 years left in your 20s. You have 8 to 10 years of prime basketball left in your career if you want to. And that was almost eye-opening. And that was one of the things that the defenders of the Celtics said all along. Oh, look back and see how old Kobe was when he won.
Right.
And look how old Jordan was when he finally broke through and won. And that's where these guys are. They're at the cusp or the beginning of that championship run in the NBA based on age and experience and all that. And I just think it's a weird spot for New England sports fans to just be almost universally optimistic optimistic and positive. Like, what's the fighting? Is there? We don't even have Brown versus Tatum anymore. It feels like
I know
everybody's just kind of settled in. Yeah, they coexist. They're both good. Who cares?
They shut everyone up. I mean, right. That's really what they wanted to do all this time, is stop all that talk about it. And there's a lot out there in that interview with Stephen A. Smith from Jaylen Brown about his relationship with Jason Tatum, which very interesting. Thank you, Stephen A. By the way, we are broadcasting live from Big Night Studios next to the Card Vault at TD Garden. If you're a content creator looking for a place to record, you can do it right here. Book your time at bignightmedia.com. And this place is great, by the way. It's right by the North Station entrance and across from the Star Market there under the escalator. You can come on down, wave hi. And I do believe that Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett are around here recording their podcast upstairs.
Oh.
I heard that. I don't know. I haven't seen them.
Right upstairs?
But I did hear
that. Like if I bang on the roof with a broomstick, they'll hear us?
Yeah, that's a pretty high ceiling, so I don't know if you'd
and
be
I'm
able
a pretty
to.
Short man.
Well, that too. But yes, that's, I guess, yeah, I'm not sure. They may be coming down here later.
Hey, Jay,
we'll
you
see.
Up there?
We'll see if we can trick them into coming in and talking to us. Either way, that'd be very cool. Here's a couple of questions that I have for the Celtics going into this year, because you're right. You do have to sort of dig a little bit, but there's one thing that I think, and this is sort of, it's kind of cheap.
I should have known you'd
this.
Find it.
Well, it's not that I found it. It's just that it's out there. Porzingis is not going to start the year. Al Horford at 38 years old is going to be your big, with Luke Kornet backing him up, and maybe Xavier Tillman, I guess, is the rotating big off the bench after that. And there's a way you can sort of look at it. There's a way you can look at that situation with Al Horford turning 38. And listen, Al Horford, I think, has still got a lot to offer. I don't think he dropped off too much last year. And with Porzingis and the times he was out, it didn't really seem like they missed him, right? Because of Horford and Kornet, everybody was playing pretty well. Kornet got rewarded with a one-year deal. And Horford's still here. He's going to be getting his first ring when they raise the banner tonight. And I just think that there's something to be said for the idea that if you're to point out a weakness, when Porzingis is out there, it's hard to find it. When he's not out there and it's Horford rotating with Kornet, you can say, okay, that's maybe not ideal. Let's say the Horford breaks down a little bit. He's 38 years old. He's running around yep. with these young guys. That's something that could reasonably happen. All of a sudden, you're stuck with Luke Kornet. Is that something that you think could pop its head up here in the early going while Porzingis is still recovering from the surgery?
Absolutely.
Could it
pop its head up?
Yeah. Sure.
But is it also possible that they just outscore that situation? That's
yeah,
also possible.
Absolutely.
Right? Like they have that ability to drain threes and to do things with smaller lineups and just... if you're looking for the concern, if you're looking for that layer of concern, that is that layer of concern. I did think it was interesting to see Anna Horford kind of questioning the graphic put out by the NBA, I believe, the fact that Al not on it.
Who was on it? I didn't see this.
It was the starting five
was
minus
the starting
Horford.
Five.
I see.
And
okay.
She's like, oh, who started half the games last postseason or something like that. I forgot exactly how she worded it, but she didn't love it. Not that that's a big deal or that that's going to be some divide.
She didn't even make
team.
A big deal. She was just like, nope. Not trying to be petty, but.
Yeah. And even Bill Belichick was like, kind of petty, Anna. So, yeah, just mentioning
it's
it.
It's petty,
but
I wonder why Al is often left out of these promos when he's the one who started almost the entire playoffs. You know, I mean, I don't know what other promo she's talking about.
But you know basketball, and you know what it takes to win. You can't help but to love Al Horford.
Because the starter is Porzingis, correct?
Right.
That's your starting five.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you wanted to put a graphic up with six because this is our deep rotation or whatever, that's fine.
Yeah.
But the way the NBA works, the way basketball works, is five guys are included in a starting lineup. And if you put a starting lineup out there, when healthy, Al Horford, not part of it.
The Celtics are so good that Anna Horford wondering why Al isn't in the promo is like a big dramatic storyline.
It's kind of the biggest
with
thing
the team
we got.
Right now. That's like the main narrative that we have. There's just not a lot else to really look at. I think this big thing could be an issue against certain teams. I don't think it's going to be something that sends them into a 10-game losing streak spiral or anything like that. But yeah, against the Sixers when Embiid's playing and it's not the second night of a back-to-back, or you know, some of these other teams with decent big against Jokic or whoever, against Karl Anthony Towns and the Knicks, who we'll see here tonight. It could end up being something, but listen, the main
nice.
Question I think
we got fans from the Czech Republic.
All right, cool. Czech Republic, hello. I don't know
in
how to
house.
Say that in Czech, but it's nice to see you guys
checking in, if you will.
Yes, absolutely. As we are live here from again Big Night
how
Studios
gritty-ing,
next to the Card Vault at TD Garden, yes, there is a podcast being recorded upstairs. Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce are upstairs. You think we're cool? Those guys are upstairs right now recording something. So there you go. Also, another little thing. And this is something you brought up before you accused me of being negative.
Oh.
Has Jason Tatum fixed his shot or not?
I don't know. Did you watch all those videos? It was the video
of him warming up at the Auerbach Center.
Yeah,
yes,
and it was like, oh, this one has the hitch and this one doesn't. And I was like, I don't know, they kind of look similar to me. I guess it doesn't go quite as low in his pre-shot mechanics or whatever. But that is a concern. Like, if you were going to find an actual basketball court, top of rotation,
right,
they're healthy, could something just go wrong? That would be a concern for me. But as you said, he's Jason Tatum.
He is.
I don't. The sane part of me doesn't expect that to be an issue. Now,
the insane part of you, however.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The skeptical, insane,
wants Jaylen
emotional.
Brown to pass him this year and be better than him and have everybody acknowledge that Jaylen Brown's a better player. That's
if you
what
want
you'd
a
like
little tease, wait till we get our predictions for the NBA season.
Exciting.
And you might be in for a surprise.
Okay.
But no, in a week, could I say, he still doesn't look like he's shooting right, and now this is going on a postseason, an international season, and a new regular season. And if it's transitioning from those, you know, it's kind of like Jalen Polk can tell me he has great hands. He can tell me that he took the hitch out of his shot, but until I see him draining shots, there's a little bit of me that's going to worry if that's going to be a carryover from last year.
Yeah, in the regular season last year, he shot 47% from the field and about 38% from three. In the playoffs, that dropped to 42% from the field and 29% from three. He's pretty famously bad shooting threes all throughout the postseason. And that's why Jalen Brown ended up being the MVP of the championship series and then the finals. I mean, that's 100% what went into that. And it's not like Brown, as good as he was, and certainly playing defense on Luka Doncic, some of the other things that he did, his shooting numbers weren't great either. They were better than Tatum's, but it was interesting how really neither of them, I didn't think, in those two rounds of the playoffs had numbers that were in line with, I mean, I'm not going to say they weren't good because they were good enough to win, but they didn't put up numbers that were in line with their season totals or their career average or any of that stuff, and it didn't matter. I mean, they breezed through the playoffs like those teams weren't even there. Like, the Pacers weren't there, like Cleveland wasn't there, and in the end, like Dallas wasn't there. They had that one win, and that was it. You didn't expect... I was surprised they didn't sweep the whole thing. Like, that's the type of thing we're talking about here. And listen, teams out there in the NBA have loaded up, especially this team we're going to see here tonight, and that's an interesting part of all this. It's been a while since the Celtics were the team that everyone was trying to beat. It's been the Heat, it's been the Warriors, it's been the Cavs, it's been, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks, other teams out there that it seemed like were going to take the reins as the new dynasty, and none of them have. And now the Celtics have a chance to do it, and I think they are poised and ready and have all the tools to get that done. 617-779-7937, there's your phone number. Quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Ross Tucker. There's a lot of Patriots news out there. We'll get his take on all of it. Gerard Mayo getting ripped by everybody from Mike Lombardi to Tom Brady to Bill Belichick all over again for calling the team soft. We'll see what Tucker has to say about that right after Brian Frazoco tells you what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by Northeastern Savings. It has officially arrived. Boston, your Celtics tip off their title defense season tonight. They will raise banner 18. They take on the new look New York Knicks with game time set for 7:30. And while some think there might be a massive amount of pressure on this team to go back to back, head coach Joe Mazzulla sure doesn't see it that way.
Zero. No pressure. We're all going to be dead soon, and it really doesn't matter anymore, so there's zero pressure. You're either going to win or you're not. It's not pressure, it's an opportunity.
Wise words of wisdom from the Celtics head coach. The Boston Bruins wrap up their road trip tonight as they are in Nashville to take on the winless Predators. Puck drop is scheduled for 8:45. The Patriots were off today, but will return to the practice field tomorrow as they get ready to host the New York Jets this Sunday at Gillette. Kickoff of that game will be at 1 o'clock. And then last night's loss to the Ravens, Bucks star receiver Chris Godwin suffered a dislocated ankle, and per NFL media, he will undergo surgery. Mike Evans also left the game early with a hamstring injury and is set to have an MRI tomorrow. With Deshaun Watson set to miss the remainder of the season, the Cleveland Browns signed former Patriots quarterback Bailey Zappe today. Good luck with that, Cleveland. And for Red Sox fans who want something to feel good about, the 2004 Red Sox Netflix documentary comes out tomorrow. Northeastern Savings Bank is the leading alternative to using a big bank for businesses and families in Massachusetts. Upgrade to a local partner. Upgrade to Northeastern Savings Bank. Member FDIC and DIF. I'm Brian Frisoco. That's what's trending on WEI. And
when you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with ShopPay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
WEI.com.
Harsh words there once again from Bill Belichick, and this time Tom Brady coming over the top rope. A little tag team action there on Gerard Mayo, who called his team soft, then walked it back immediately on the Greg Hill Show the next morning. For more on that, on the line right now is our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day be delicious. Mr. Tucker, how are we doing today?
I am doing fantastic, fellas. How are you?
We're doing great. We're live down here for the Celtics opener, but we do want to talk Patriots with you in particular. The drama from, first of all, another pretty good game from Drake May, but a defensive effort that had the head coach calling his team soft, walking it back, and now getting shrapnel from all sides, basically, of people saying you shouldn't call your team soft. What's your take on Mayo's reaction, and do you agree there with Belichick and Brady that that's not really a great thing to do?
Yeah, I think certainly a learning moment for Gerard, right? By the way, I can totally see what he was thinking when he said it, because if you watch the game, you know, Tank Bigsby and those, they were running right through him.
Sure were.
You know, they did look like a soft team at times, and certainly not like the Patriots that we're used to seeing. So I think he was frustrated and gave his honest assessment. Now, I guess I would submit to you that the physicality of a team is a lot of times a reflection, and the effort is considered a reflection of the head coach. So maybe that's in particular why he was so frustrated, but you know, that's been a marked change in Detroit since Dan Campbell got there. And so I think, you know, if Mayo's going to say that, not only is it a poor reflection on his players, but it's a bad look for him. You know, it's a bad look for him if his players, if he feels like they're soft out there. And that was kind of my biggest takeaway just watching the game. I don't know if you guys should feel better or worse that Drake May is like the least of your issues. I guess better, because he's kind of the future. And again, he did some really good things, and he's encouraging. But then you look at what's happening elsewhere on the team, and it's special teams, it's defense, it's like Hunter Henry false starting. I mean, even the areas of the team or the guys on the team that the Patriots are supposed to be able to count on, they are not able to do so.
So the on-field feels like it's almost become the least of the problems with this team. They've had a number of guys with interactions with the law in recent weeks. They've had a number of guys going on social media bitching about their roles or how their situation was handled. They've had guys talking to the media about teammates in terms of egos and selfish play. Have you been on teams like this, and is it salvageable? Is the coach able to pull out of a situation like this, or are there some teams that are just rotten to the core and you need a reset the next year?
Yeah, I have been on teams like that. And I guess it is salvageable, and it's in large part based on whether you're just winning or not, right? I mean, it's not that complicated, but
right.
I was on an 0-5 team in Washington in 2001. A lot of finger pointing there. A lot of guys not on the same page. Then we won a game, then we won another one, then we won another one, and
all of a sudden it was like kumbaya, you know. Probably the same in Buffalo in 04 when we started off 0-4 and then went 9-2 in our next 11. But other years, 2002 Cowboys, there was a lot of that. 2003 Bills, there was a lot of that, and it wasn't salvageable. And the head coach got fired at the end of both those years. Now, in both those instances, Dave Campbell and Greg Williams, it was their third year. So it wasn't their first year like Mayo, but he is being tested from all fronts, and it's he is getting a baptism by fire. You know, I think he knew that it would be a rebuilding year. They knew that, you know, when they traded Judah, they knew what the deal was. But it's one thing to say, hey, we're going to play young guys. We're going to have a bunch of cap space and draft picks in future years and all that stuff. It's another thing when you're actually going through it and guys are doing the things that, that you guys referenced. I think the thing that would be most concerning, if I'm a Patriots fan, is this is how these guys are performing and this is how they're acting after Elliott Wolf rewarded so many of these guys with extensions.
Yep.
I mean, they've given so many of these guys contracts, and I think part of that thought process was like twofold, right? Number one, these are core guys that we believe in, that we think are part of the solution. And then number two, hey, it might be ugly this year. You know, we need to make sure that the guys that we think are part of the solution are taken care of and realize that they've got financial security. They're going to be here so that they can be the leaders of when things go south. Well, that's certainly not happening with some of the things going on and off the field.
We're talking with Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker. He's brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Ross, is it fair for someone like Bill Belichick, who had a hand in this roster, maybe not in the offseason, but certainly in some of the players that this group inherited, is it fair for him to be taking a victory lap right now?
Well, I mean, I don't know that he's really taking a victory lap. You know, he's in the picture now. He was asked a question. He probably did not like. You know, a lot of guys that he brought in were called soft, did not think that was a good decision by Mayo. I would be really curious to see what the reaction would have been if someone was sort of Belichick's pelts on the wall had said the same thing, right? Because there's absolutely things that Belichick could and did get away with that first-time coaches or young head coaches would not at all have been able to get away with, which is why I'm kind of fascinated to see where he lands next year and to see if he changes his style at all. But, you know, one thing I really appreciate about Belichick in the media is he is settling all scores. You know?
It's like Michael Corleone.
He's got the microphone, and whether it's the Falcons hiring practices or free agency or the Jets, or whatever, you know, obviously Mayo and the Patriots, he is using that. And he, like, as you guys know, he knows exactly what he's doing. He was the first head coach I ever saw that when I had to lift at whatever it was, 6 a.m. in the morning, he was always on the treadmill, walking like incline, which is a good thing to do. And he would have the thickest packet of clips.
Yep.
From both the Patriots beat writers and the opposing team. And so he'd have a couple highlighters there, and he would highlight all the things that, you know, to, like, what were the storylines that we were going to be asked. Also, what guys said that he didn't like, and they shouldn't have said that. And then in particular, any little morsel of information from the opponent that might be, you know, beneficial for the game. So he is very, 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 by far, the most media conscious head coach I ever played for. I played for 9 in the NFL.
Not to brag, Ross, but I was the one who gave him those clips in 2001. I was the graduate assistant in the media relations department at the time, and I used to have to do those clips at like 5 in the morning. Patriots clips, opponents clips, national clips, and he got a massive stack of them to take to the treadmill with him. So it was, I can validate your story. Question. So Drake May, you mentioned, he's not the problem right now. But can he be the solution, and can he be the solution for a team that seems to lack direction and leadership? Can he pull this team up by its bootstraps as a rookie quarterback, or is that even unfair for him to be asked to do that or try to do that?
I think that's probably too much to ask, given what's around him. But he can certainly give the fans and the other players hope. You know, they see what he's doing. They see some of the throws he makes. He gives them a chance, which is why the last couple weeks has to be even more frustrating. You know, you got a young kid at quarterback who's giving you a chance. Now, he certainly, there's some ball placement issues at times. There's certainly some room for improvement with Drake, no doubt. But that's to be expected. But you would think that those guys would be excited, kind of rally around having, hey, we got a young quarterback that we might have the guy. You know, and I don't know that they're ready to declare him that yet, but I think they all have to be really encouraged, because no matter what you see from a guy in preseason games or practice or whatever, you still don't really know how they're going to perform when it's live bullets, when defensive coordinators are game planning for them, when they're going against the opponent's best, and they're seeing new things every week, which, by the way, is something to really keep an eye on the next few games, right? So whenever you get a rookie quarterback, these D coordinators, they're going to try different things. How does he handle, you know, blitz zero? How does he handle a three-man rush? How does he handle this coverage, that coverage? And so they're trying to figure out right now what works best, what May struggles with the most. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, one of these games coming up, they kind of figure something out and he has kind of a clunker of a game, a few picks or whatever. The real test of him then will be how he bounces back from that in terms of the adversity. And also, the next team's going to do the exact same thing that the guy before, the week before, did. So we'll see if that's like a fatal flaw that he can't overcome, or it's just something that, you know, he needs to not make the same mistake twice.
All right, we'll leave it right there then. Ross Tucker, thanks so much for the time, and we'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
Sounds great. See you guys.
All right, that's Odyssey NFL Insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. Quick break. When we come back, we will go over a couple of things that were said in the interview with Stephen A. Smith and Jaylen Brown. There's a lot of stuff to get through from that interview. We'll pick through some of it right after these words.
WEEI.
WEEI. New England Sports Original.
Get Boston Sports Original on the go.
Wherever you go.
Just download the Odyssey app.
We're right back to it. Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
How would you describe your relationship with Jason Tatum?
Me and him have a championship level relationship. You know, I think that together we've been here for a long time, and we've had to listen to any and everything for the longest. That we couldn't play together, that things should be broken up. We wasn't leaders, and we were close every single year, like right there, right there, right there, every single year. And we viewed it as like just stay the course, while everybody else viewed it as blow it up. Mm-hmm. And we got the receipts.
He's got the receipts, ladies and gentlemen. I'm probably in some of those receipts, I'd imagine. I don't know, Andy. You were a big Jaylen Brown fan, so you probably weren't. But
oh, Tatum's got a lot of receipts for me, though.
Okay, well, there you go. So there's receipts for everybody, I'd say. And listen, you win, you get to keep the receipts. However, the one part of that I would take even a small, tiny, tiny, tiny little bit of issue with is staying the course. Did you really stay the course? Like, is Marcus Smart here? You know, like, did you stay that course, or did you upgrade a lot of things around these two players instead of splitting up those two players? Because if you're just talking about the course of those two guys,
yeah,
then yes, they stayed the course. But that's a very different looking team than the one that lost to Golden State, than the one that lost to Miami those two times. Like, it's not the part of what I think catapulted them into this space that they are right now was the fact that they didn't just go run it back and stay the course with Marcus Smart and some of those other players. They upgraded them, and they ended up, I think, really benefiting from that.
Yeah, I think he was specifically talking about those two being the foundational pillars of the Celtics roster, the organization, the team, and building around them rather than picking one of them, which it was a foregone conclusion to everybody not named Andy Hart that if you were picking one, you were picking Tatum and you were trading Jaylen Brown. And I can remember, I keep receipts, because I can remember Scal on NBC Sports Boston openly talking about trading Jaylen Brown, which to me, for that network, the way they handle things and are very Homer-centric in their coverage.
It was a big statement.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Definitely.
So if I'm Jaylen Brown, I'm keeping receipts even on people that are kind of probably on the team bus and the team plane or however they do it in that league.
Kendrick Perkins is excommunicated from the Celtics for all the receipts they have on him, and he's doubling down. He's like, yeah, no one's afraid of the Celtics. Everyone's afraid of the Celtics. The entire league is terrified of the Celtics right now.
I would also argue, when you can't finish your own answer without chuckling, you don't believe your own crap. And there's a little bit of that. We have a championship relationship. That's basically the what they're going to say now, a different version of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, in my opinion,
I thought that was a good answer.
Oh, I think it's a fine answer.
Yeah.
But when you chuckle, you're telling me it hasn't always been roses. It hasn't always been perfect. We're not best buddies. However you want to read between those lines and those chuckles, when he chuckles like that, because they got the they got the hammer now, because they won.
Yep.
So they're on top. It's a little bit like David Price, right? He won. So you have leverage, you have hammer, whatever you want to call it. But don't tell me there weren't bumps along the way. Don't tell me there weren't questions along the way. Don't tell me there weren't ego issues along the way when maybe Jason Tatum was calling Brad Stevens and you weren't involved in the conversation and you're like, wait, am I part of this or am I not part of this? Or is that that's a need to know only and I'm not one that needs to know kind of thing?
And these are two players who were baptized in drama with Kyrie Irving. I mean,
correct.
That was their first years here. That was their introduction to the NBA was the Kyrie Irving at his most Kyrie Irving, like, you know, out of his mind, like Kyrie Irving experience. So I think that there's something to be said for that too. Like, these are guys who sort of in learning about what the league is like and what superstars are and how to behave and sort of all that stuff were basically taken under the wing of Kyrie Irving, which it's amazing that they made it out of that.
And by extension, they knew exactly what happened to Isaiah Thomas.
Right.
When Isaiah Thomas was the most popular Celtic, he was the talk of the town, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was the centerpiece. He was scoring late. It was fun, right? And then gone.
Yeah.
Right, like he was most favored
Isaiah played with Jaylen Brown his rookie year, and then that was it. He never played with Tatum, I don't think, right? Yeah.
But he's aware of it.
Yep.
Like, you can't not be aware, like, wait, that guy was the star, and then you kicked his ass out of town after kind of riding him when he probably shouldn't even have been playing. Like, I bet you there was some.
Well, they didn't send him to Siberia. There's a lot of weird.
They sent him to play with LeBron. Like,
with
I'm not going to shed tears
Cleveland
for him.
I know. Like, do people act
after
like
they ripped one of the wheels off? They sent him as a freaking three-legged car.
Well, okay, so it's better if he played here with on one leg and no hip or whatever.
The damage was done, my friend.
I agree. He was injured. He was damaged goods, and that's maybe a problem for the Cleveland Cavaliers. But
you don't think that was
a big issue for the Celtics? I know Anthony Davis and all them. Yeah, I mean. Listen, it's something that happens. It's the NBA. It's not like it's the first time you've ever traded your best player on a team that was sort of a fringe playoff team, which is what they were. And
but
I think
don't
that
pretend
you know,
you can't go from beloved to gone.
Sure.
And I think they saw that.
I think that's fair. Okay,
doesn't mean
sure.
they thought it was dirty pool necessarily, just harsh reality.
Anthony Davis's father, you remember? He's like, I don't like the way that they treated Isaiah Thomas, and I don't want my son going there. And it's like, okay, Anthony Davis's father, that's weird. But, like, yeah, it's not like they traded him to Detroit or cut him or sent him to the G League or something. They traded him to Cleveland to go play with LeBron. I thought he ended up having, as far as all that go, for a banged-up, undersized guard, I thought that was about as good a spot as you could send him. You know, like, that was a team that was competing for championships. The Celtics weren't competing for championships. They were getting smoked by Cleveland. That's what was going on back then in 2016, 2017, whenever that was. So, I don't know. I mean, and that's, again, another era of this team before the Brown and Tatum era began. And I just think that watching it sort of plateau, I guess is the way I'd look at it, where they started from and sort of how it just plateaued at the conference finals with that dip up for the championship, that one championship that they lost against Golden State. And it just sort of seemed like they were on pace to be like the Pacers in the 90s, you know? Like, they'd get there, they could even make it to an NBA finals or two, but there was always going to be Shaq and Kobe there to beat them, or there was always going to be the Jordan's Bulls that beat them in the 90s, or whoever it was. Like, they're good enough to get there, and everybody knows that Reggie Miller's a great player and Rick Smith was a great player and all that, but they just weren't good enough to beat the great teams. And it seemed like that's where they were going. And it's just, I'd say you have to give a lot of credit to Brad Stevens, first of all, for having the wherewithal to make the moves that he made. That Jrue Holiday trade was brilliant. And also Wick Grosbeck for bankrolling it, and really for Irv Grosbeck for bankrolling him. So that's what it took. But it was necessary, and it worked. I mean, it really worked.
So you started the show, we started talking about the Celtics and what could derail them, and mm-hmm. injuries is the obvious one.
It's the main one. I think that's the only one.
Is this story totally put to bed?
I say so, yeah.
Brown and Tatum. You don't think there's any way there could ever be a resurgence of, huh?
Oh, no way could it
re- egos.
I think right now it's
ball
to bed.
Dominance.
Anything could happen. Some could pop back.
It's basketball,
up. Sure, yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Basketball is inherently
these guys
a soap
are all
opera.
Still very sensitive to outside noise too. So you know, it's only going to take a couple of weeks of Stephen A. Smith and whoever else saying, "Hey, you know, I think Jaylen Brown may be passing Jason Tatum," and all of a sudden this is back up in a topic again. We'll see if it actually affects the locker room. I kind of think it won't. You know, I think at this point it's really sort of, "Hey, you know what? Let's just all share the wealth."
Well, that's jump with the camera like. On me, please.
Okay.
I actually think the only way it will rear its ugly head again is kind of the opposite of what we're talking about with the Patriots. If there's a losing streak.
Right.
If there's a losing streak and suddenly the Celtics have lost 4 out of 6 and 6 out of 8 and like there's this, huh, what the hell's going on there?
Right.
I think that tends to fester and feed these types of soap opera issues, ego issues, locker room issues, ball issues. But if they win the way, A, they're supposed to, but B, I think everybody just flat out expects them to.
Sure.
I think that squashes those things. It's hard. You got to be a special kind of a-hole to really pursue those things if you're on pace to win, I don't know, their number's 58.5. If you're on pace to win 55 to 60 games and there's this festering thing going on,
mm-hmm.
You got issues.
Yeah.
You got problems.
The only thing that could really do it is if they take a big step back defensively or shooting three-pointers, because that's what this team is. It's a 3-and-D team. Joe Mazzulla insists on it, and we'll get to him and what he has to say about this team in the upcoming season, and we'll get to the rest of the Eastern Conference and the rest of the league, as a matter of fact, because everybody's looking at the Celtics as the team to beat, and they've, in some cases, tailored their entire offseason accordingly. We'll get to all of that. Who stands a chance? Who had the best offseasons? And who could the Celtics legitimately fear at all this season, if anyone? That's all coming up right after this.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.